All right, so my name is Turner Henderson, and I'm here with Mr. John Dawkins on the University of North Carolina's campus. The date is March 27th, 2014, and this interview is part of the 2014 Spring Undergraduate Internship for the SOHP. Mr. Dawkins, if I could just get you to start off by telling me a little bit about where you grew up and kind of just your childhood.
Okay, I was born in 1950. In Hamlet, North Carolina, and my family lived in Rockingham, which is about 4 miles from Hamlet, and spent my entire childhood in Rockingham and high school years in Rockingham. And my parents worked in textile mills, which is what most people did in Rockingham. And I graduated from high school in 1968, attended the University of North Carolina for 3 years, and then took a little break and eventually graduated from Carolina in 1977.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit more about growing up in Rockingham? And, you know, how did you like such a small community?
I liked it in my early years. We had a very strong church family, an extended church family, and that I think looking back on it, as I've aged, I really didn't appreciate that as much as I should have. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like having 40 or 50 parents to look after you and care about you. And I enjoyed that. It was a very thriving neighborhood when I was a kid. The mills were going strong. Everybody had jobs. We didn't have we weren't rich, but we did have a happy childhood. And there were classes in the school were big because there were a lot of kids in the neighborhood. I actually enjoyed it. As I got older, got into high school, I started to think about moving to a larger city. Mm-hmm. I sort of thought of myself as a big city boy trapped in a small town. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about moving to New York or to some larger city.
How old were you when you were thinking about this?
Probably. When I started high school, 14 to 18, okay. During that period,
okay.
I sort of got to the point where I knew that I was going to get away from Rockingham. Mm-hmm. You know, once I got to that age, it just was too small for me, and I just knew that somehow, some way, I was going to escape that small town.
So how many siblings did you have?
I had one brother, one younger brother, a year and a half younger than myself.
And could you kind of just describe kind of more of the textile mill, aspect of, you know, your parents working, or did you work in the mills at all?
I worked one or two summers, between school,
right.
School semesters, and, did not like it at all. Mm-hmm. It just reinforced the fact that I did not want to stay around.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, both of them worked in the cotton mills, usually different shifts. So, you know, my mom would be working a lot at night. My dad would work during the day, and they would sort of pass me and my brother off. It's a cross paths, mm-hmm. going to and from work, you know, so.
How was that, growing up in that kind of environment?
You know, I sort of enjoyed it at the time. I got to sort of bond with my mother and my father. You know, my father would come home at night, cook us supper, and, you know, it's always fun to spend time with your dad. Mm-hmm. He would take us to the movies or, you know, out to get something to eat or something. And it was actually sort of fun. That's, mm-hmm. that's all I knew at the time and sort of enjoyed it.
Was that pretty normal for Rockingham? I mean, how much was Rockingham at that time kind of, did have a mill town type aspect?
It was. In fact, I say I grew up in Rockingham, but I actually grew up in East Rockingham, which is not incorporated. It's just a little area south of the town of Rockingham. It was all mill villages. Mm-hmm. There were four or five large mills, and little communities grew up around them. They were totally mill villages,
mm-hmm.
and everybody worked there.
So when you were in high school, was it pretty much a mill children high school?
Every child I ever knew grew mm-hmm. up with.
Wow.
Was their parents worked in the mill.
Wow. Yeah. So when was the first time that you came in contact with someone that was gay? Was it in Rockingham?
Not that I knew of. I'm sure I came in contact with people that were gay in Rockingham, but it wasn't until I got here to Chapel Hill that I actually started meeting gay people.
Okay. And what about yourself? When did you kind of start to realize that you were gay or maybe different?
Probably late in high school, maybe junior or senior year in high school.
How did that come about?
I'm not really sure. Just a feeling you sort of get. And because, you know, you didn't see TV shows with it on back then.
Right.
Just sort of, I knew that I was attracted to men sexually. I didn't know exactly what it was. I do remember going to see visit my grandmother one summer. I got on the Greyhound bus. My mom put me on the Greyhound bus, and she lived in Hartsville, South Carolina, which was about 60 miles south. And the bus, you always had to transfer in Society Hill and wait for the next bus that went to Hartsville. And there was a little bookstore there, and I saw a gay book. It was really pornography, you know. I mean, it was, you know, lightweight pornography at the time, but. And I was probably 17 at the time, but I took it up to the counter and he sold it to me. So I spent the rest of the weekend sort of reading that book, and it sort of gave me an idea of what was going on with my life. Yeah.
Right.
So that's probably the thing that really gave me something, that there was something else out there.
Mm-hmm.
Some other people out there like me.
When did you actually come out to your family, or?
I actually still haven't
really
come out to my family.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's known, but it's not something we've ever talked about.
Are your parents still alive?
No, my dad died in 1980.
Okay.
My mom is still alive. She's 80. She just turned 81.
Okay. Are you still close with her?
Oh, very close. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does she still live in Rockingham?
Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess we can move on a little bit to your time at UNC.
Okay.
What made you, I guess when you were growing up in Rockingham and, you know, in high school, was college always your plan all along?
College was always my plan.
Okay.
Yeah, from very early age. I always knew that somehow, some way, I was going to go to college. And my family knew that, too.
Right.
I mean, they weren't very rich, and we didn't exactly understand how it was going to happen, but... I was going to college.
Was that rare for Rockingham?
It probably was, yeah. And at least in the area that I lived in, the mill villages, yeah.
What about, did your brother go to college?
He went to 3 years to ECU.
Okay.
And dropped out.
Okay. So what made you decide on going to UNC specifically?
Well, strange as it may seem, it wasn't anything academically. I had been accepted to East Carolina, and that's where I was going. I was a big Carolina Tar Heel basketball fan, and one night I was listening to Carolina in the Far West Classic, and they were playing Utah, and they got way behind, and they came back and won the game, and I was so excited. I decided that night that I was going to Carolina, and this was like, you know, probably January or February of my senior year in college, which just goes to show you how different it is nowadays.
Right.
You know, I sent off for an application, applied, and got accepted. And within a month, you know, it was not a big deal.
So back when you were applying to UNC, did within Rockingham, did Chapel Hill kind of have a certain, like, mystique about it? I mean, you know, people always point to it as a very liberal place. Was it like that back then when you were leaving Rockingham and coming to Chapel Hill?
I think most people felt about it like that in Rockingham, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what interest did you have coming out of high school and going to Carolina? What did you, academically, I guess, what did you want to study?
I planned to be a math teacher. I was real good in math in high school, and that's what I started off here. I was going to be a... I got sort of a loan from the state, teacher's loan. I don't know if that still exists, but it paid about half my tuition. It was something I didn't pay back. So I was going to be a math teacher when I came here.
So you started off majoring in math?
I did, yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me about...
Well, I guess I didn't actually declare a major in my first year, but that's what I intended to do.
Okay. Yeah. So you said you went 3 years and then took a year or two off. And then
They asked me to take a year. Okay. Several years.
So can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to say, you know, so what happened during those 3 years that led to
I that? Wasn't a very good student.
Okay.
I wasn't prepared for Carolina, coming from a small high school. I wasn't prepared academically or socially. I got up here and enjoyed myself a lot and got a little behind my freshman year. And I worked and worked and worked, and I was able to get my grades up enough to come to my sophomore year, come back for my junior year. But just getting over that hump to come back for my senior year, it just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have the grades to come back my senior year, so I had to take a year off, actually several years off. I moved back to Rockingham, worked several little part-time jobs while I was there, and it was killing me mm-hmm. to be back in that small town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took some correspondence courses, and I took a summer session up here, and eventually I decided just to move back to Chapel Hill. So I got a job here. And it was still a couple of years before I had the money to come back to school and mm-hmm. to get my grades up enough so that I could actually come back to Carolina. So
okay, could you describe those first 3 years a little bit more? I mean, was it just a complete culture shock for you, or was it more academic or social? I mean, you know, can you just kind of prescribe what?
At first, I think it was academic. I did not know how to study. I didn't know what they expected from classes. I was just sort of out of my element. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't ready for a big school and for professors that didn't really, they don't give you the individual care that you might need, you know. And I didn't know who to ask, or none of my family had ever been to college. So I didn't know who to ask. I just sort of studied and studied and studied and tried to do the best I could, and it just wasn't. And first semester of my freshman year, my dad got sick. He developed a brain tumor. He was operated on in like October of my freshman year. And so that sort of, emotionally, that sort of messed me up my first year or two. I got to, you know, I really didn't feel like studying because he was up here almost dead, you know, almost dying, and he eventually lived for several more years. But that sort of helped me get behind too.
Mm-hmm.
And then second semester, I sort of started partying a little bit and meeting, you know, once you meet friends, and sometimes they're not the best
influences.
Best influences, you know. So I would start partying, but like I said, I had the grades to get back into my second year and to my third year, but third year was total party because mm-hmm. I could see the writing on the wall that I wasn't, especially the second semester. I could see the writing on the wall, and instead of withdrawing from school, which was probably the smart thing to do, I just sort of blew off second semester of my junior year mm-hmm. and got even further behind than I would have been. So it was difficult.
Mm-hmm. So socially, like when you say you started partying and stuff, what was your social circle like? I mean, were you hanging out with the gay community this time at all?
Or? I was not. Okay. I was not. This was. I was still hanging out with friends that I'd met when I first came to Chapel Hill, and mm-hmm. also a couple of friends that I knew from Rockingham, a couple of friends that went to the same high school I went to that were up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was partying mostly with them at that time. It really wasn't until, and I'm skipping over a few years, but it wasn't until I came back after, you know, spending a couple of years back in Rockingham, and I moved back to Chapel Hill, and all of those original friends had graduated by that time, and so I guess I sort of felt comfortable starting to make gay friends,
mm-hmm.
and that's when I started to develop a circle of gay friends here in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
This was back when I when I came back up here.
Okay. So, what year was that when you came back to Chapel Hill from Rockingham?
It was, I set out 1 year, and then I came back up here and got a job in September of 1972.
Okay.
I was working at the, there was a snack bar in the student union, Graham Memorial Student Union. And I got a job there and actually worked there for 6 years off and on while I was, went back to school.
Mm-hmm. In those first 3 years that you were here, what was the campus like in terms, because obviously that's the late 60s. What was the campus like just generally and maybe in terms of activism? What was going on at the time, if you remember?
You mean as far as gay activism or just activism in
general? If there was gay activism, but yeah, activism in general.
I don't remember a lot of gay activism mm-hmm. on campus during those first 3 years. That would have been 68 to 71. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of activism as far as workers' rights. I can remember a lot of protests and a lot of activism as far as getting the workers on campus rights that they didn't have.
Was that when the food worker strike?
Food worker strike was during that time. I don't remember which year that was, mm-hmm. 69 or so. But I remember that going on. And then the last year I was here, no, it wasn't last year. It was the second year. It was the Kent State killings happened.
And that there was a pretty big student kind of protest.
I mean, pretty much school was canceled for about the last month,
Wow.
I can remember that being a big deal. I marched in several of those, marches, and there was rallies every day, and that was a pretty exciting time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a big rally outside of Hill Hall where the professors were meeting to see if they were going to grant the students amnesty for the semester.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't go back to class, what was going to happen? And they voted. They had speakers set up, and there was a huge, probably 10,000 students out on the lawn of McCorkle Place
mm-hmm.
listening to this meeting. And they finally voted to grant amnesty, and we could keep the grades we had at the moment, or we could take exams, whatever we wanted to do, but we didn't have to go back to class for the rest of the year because the university was closed essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty exciting. Yeah.
So for you personally, Kent State, protests against Vietnam, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you said you were pretty involved in those too. Politically, mm-hmm. were you against Vietnam?
Definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about racial activism? Do you remember any of that?
I can remember. I'm not sure what the group was called, but there was a black student movement. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what it was.
Black student movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was getting active, really active about that time.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember that.
Okay. So then after you left and came back, did you notice anything different about campus? I guess it wasn't that long of a time period that you were gone, but did you notice anything different about campus or yourself when you came back?
In what way?
In terms of, activism on campus, what students were, protesting or whatever, was that changing?
I don't remember any big change. It was really only a year and a half that I was gone, so I don't really remember a big change at the time. And for the first year and a half I was here, I wasn't really in school. I was working on campus, mm-hmm. but I wasn't really in school. So I don't think I really noticed the stuff that was going on campus that much for a while.
Okay. So you said when you came back, though, that you felt kind of more comfortable making gay friends.
Yes.
Could you talk more about that?
I'm not sure how much I should talk about, but there were places on campus where gay people could meet,
mm-hmm.
and I made a lot of friends in that situation on campus, and there was actually a big gay bar here out at Eastgate Shopping Center called the Electric Company.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was back in maybe 73, 74, something like that was when that was a big. And so I started going out there and meeting gay friends out there too.
Mm-hmm.
And realized there was a huge gay community here in the Triangle area.
Mm-hmm.
That I wasn't aware of before.
So besides that bar, were there any bars in Chapel, like closer on Franklin Street or anything?
There was a bar called The Cave that was up
still there,
on
actually.
West Franklin. Yeah, I think it is. I think I went there once.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. It was I remember it being a small, very small place, and I think there might have been a pool table or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went there once with somebody that I met here on campus, and we went down and had a beer and talked. And that was really the only time I went there. There was also a few mixed bars downtown back in the mid-70s. There was a place called Manhattan Transfer, I think. It was sort of behind where the Buns,
okay,
hamburger place is, sort of right. There was an alleyway that went from Columbia Street over to He's Not Here.
Okay.
You could actually get to He's Not Here, and there were a couple of bars in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And Manhattan Transfer was sort of a mixed bar that had a couple of gay nights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it probably closed because of that, because it you got the reputation as a gay bar, and people didn't want to go there after.
Did they advertise, you know, how did they advertise gay nights?
I think it was just word of mouth.
Okay.
I don't think it was ever advertised in the papers or anywhere. I think it was just word of mouth.
Okay.
It was sort of something that just happened over time. You know, gay people, maybe it was a slow night otherwise, and gay people started, you know, coming there on that night, and just sort of became a gay night.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a gay, I'm not sure if this was a gay bar or a mixed bar, but there was and I don't even remember where it was. I remember where it was, but I think it was sort of downstairs, you know, where Johnny T-shirt is.
Mm-hmm.
And you go back in the back, and there's this circular stairway that goes down to the ground floor. I think that's where it was. I think it was down there. I think that was a gay bar. It had a big grand opening, and I don't think it ever opened its doors after the first night.
Wow.
I'm not sure what happened, if there was some Chapel Hill didn't want that or
mm-hmm.
what, but I don't think it, I think it had a big grand opening, and then that was the end of it.
Was there any like pressure from police towards any of these bars or anything like that?
None that I remember.
No.
What
about just other people in the community, other students? Was there like public outcry about these bars or anything?
I don't ever remember any public outcry. I remember that a couple of my friends left the bar that I was telling you about. Near He's Not Here,
mm-hmm.
went over to He's Not Here and danced together, and there was a big public outcry about that.
Okay.
They were asked to leave, and there was a sort of a small protest from some gay people that would go over to He's Not Here and just sort of sit and force them, you know, they would dance,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, force themselves on the bar. And
right.
That sort of lasted for a few weeks, and then it sort of, I remember it didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm. If you could, would you feel comfortable talking about the places on campus that gay people met?
I would feel comfortable talking about it if that's something you want to
include. Yeah, absolutely.
In the interview. Sure. Yeah, there were bathrooms on campus.
Yes, the tea rooms.
Yeah,
okay.
Tea rooms on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if that was something. That,
right.
Yeah. I feel totally comfortable that there were tea rooms, several tea rooms, big ones that people would go to and
mm-hmm.
and meet there.
Mm-hmm. Were these kind of all over campus, or
there was one in the basement of Wilson Library that was big. There was also a big study area outside of the bathroom where people would congregate, and it was a good place if you really weren't sure of your sexual orientation. You were sort of curious about things, that you could sit there and study you know, you could watch things going on, and maybe by the time you got comfortable with it, you could actually talk to somebody.
Right.
And there was also one in Murphy Hall and Bingham Hall. There were several mm-hmm. buildings that had these tea rooms.
How widely known was this among students and the administration?
I remember that it was very well known. Mm-hmm. I think it was well known. They were like the one at Murphy Hall. The building was left open all night. So I think campus knew that it was I think the people on campus knew that it was a place where this happened, and they were okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as okay with it as you could be. I think.
So there wasn't any, like, the administration was never active in trying to kind of shut these down.
I never remember any sort of police presence at any of these, or ever feeling uncomfortable that we were going to be arrested at any moment. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so I just want to ask you about a particular place that's come up in some research.
Okay.
The Friendly Castle. Are you familiar with that at all? Castle on Friendly Lane.
You know,
it may have been a little bit after you were here.
No, I do remember vaguely hearing about that, but I never really understood what the whole situation was. In fact, I may have even known people that lived at Friendly Lane, but I don't know. I've heard about it, but I don't know anything about it.
Okay. So outside of the few gay bars and mixed bars and the tea rooms, what other kind of space was there for gay students on campus or in Chapel Hill? I mean,
I don't remember any other at that time, other outlet for gay people on campus other than that.
So, I mean, are those two kind of the only ways that at least you knew of how to kind of interact and meet gay people?
That was the only way I knew at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess this kind of leads into this Carolina Gay Association a little bit. So that was started in 74,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess you had been there for a year or two for your second stint, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How involved were you in the founding or the beginnings of the Carolina Gay Association?
Not very much at all. I think I told you on the phone that I wasn't really involved with it very much. I knew people who were working on it. I knew Dan. I guess Dan had a big role in it. Dan Leonard had a big role
in
it. I knew Dan. I knew Tom Carr. I don't know if that name has come up in your interviews, but mm-hmm. he was important in founding it. I knew those two people mainly,
mm-hmm.
so I knew that it was going on, and I was working in the student union at the time, and you know, I knew that they were meeting in the student union, and at that time, during the early stages of that, I really hadn't come out to the people at work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had gay friends, and I think a few of the people that I worked with knew that I was gay because of the friends that would come up and talk to me. I mean, it was just pretty obvious. But I hadn't really formally come out to my work, so it sort of kept a low profile.
Mm-hmm.
But I did attend a couple of meetings there in the union. I remember attending several meetings there of the CGA.
What were those meetings like? Could you describe them if you remember?
I remember them more as there were speakers and stuff, but I sort of remember them as being more of a cruise type situation where people were going to see who else was gay and more to meet people than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How big were those meetings that you did attend?
The ones I attended were probably very small. They were probably 10 people.
Okay.
Not very big at all, the ones that I was at.
Were there any women, or was there any mm-hmm. racial diversity?
There were black students in it. There were a couple of mm-hmm. black students that I don't remember any women in the meetings that I went to.
So outside of just attending a few meetings, were you involved at all in the CGA or?
Not really. Okay. Not really. I remember probably the only involvement I had was I think they were planning there was going to be a big Southern Gay Convention mm-hmm. on campus.
Right.
I don't remember what it was called. I remember what it was called, but it was the first one was going to be in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. And I was asked at one of the meetings if I could get the snack bar to donate some food. And so this was my sort of opportunity to come out to my my coworkers and to my boss. And I asked them if, you know, we were having this big convention and would they be willing to donate some food to the, and of course they were. So that was probably my one and only CGA, you know, doing something for the CGA.
So did you ever, we've heard a little bit about like consciousness raising groups and different like social functions, like they have dances and stuff. Did you ever go to any of those?
I never went to any of those. Okay. No.
Did you ever hear of Lambda, the publication the CGA put out?
I did hear about it. I don't really remember if I ever saw one or not.
Okay. All right. Well, if you can remember, did the CGA have relationships with other student groups on campus? Were they kind of isolated? Or
I honestly don't remember. Mm-hmm. I would assume that they were sort of isolated, but I don't know that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't even remember if they had office space in the union or not. I don't remember.
Okay.
If that was the case or not.
Okay. So you were here. You graduated in 77.
Right.
Is that mm-hmm. right? Okay. What was your, when you ended up coming back? Sorry, earlier. Okay. 72 or 73. What did you end up studying? Were you still sticking to math?
Oh no, I had changed several times since okay. then. Like I said, I was sort of I couldn't find anything that I really enjoyed or was good at. I was majored in English. I majored in elementary education, and then when I came back, when I finally decided to come back to school full time, I looked at what I had taken. I had taken a lot of geography courses. Mm-hmm. I'd taken a lot of things that would be accepted as part of a geography major. And so I decided that that's, you know, in fact, I would be able to complete a degree in two semesters. So that's what I did. I ended up majoring in geography, and that's mm-hmm. that's what I got my degree in.
Okay. How did you like that?
I did. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved geography. I made that. I'd taken a bunch of geography courses just as electives back in my original stint at school. And so, you know, that was something I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoyed, I took a couple of cartography courses, which I enjoyed. And I was always an artist at heart. And so I sort of enjoyed those courses a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of had in the back of my mind that I would eventually go back to school and graduate school in city and regional planning. That never happened, but I thought, geography degree would sort of help me in that. Mm-hmm. I'd taken some urban geography courses, which would interest me in city planning. So I never did, but that was sort of the aim at the time.
Mm-hmm. So besides the CGA, in your second stint, what other kinds of things were you involved in on campus? I know you obviously worked in the student union, but
That's essentially what I did. I worked my way through school, and I really didn't have time to. I enjoyed sports. I went to a lot of sports events on campus. That's basically, you know, what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't part of any groups or clubs or anything like that.
Okay.
When I went back to school.
Okay. And then, so I guess by the time you graduated in 77, had the gay community grown since you had been there?
It had grown a lot.
And was it kind of more open?
It was more open, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, still probably not as open as it is today, of course, but it was moving toward being very open.
Right. Were there any more gay bars, do you remember?
I by that time, I think the electric company had closed, and another bar called Blueberry Hill had opened out on 15501 toward Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the big bar at the time, in like 1977. and 78, mm-hmm. you know, during that period that I was still in Chapel Hill.
So when you would go to these gay bars and the tea rooms and just the gay community generally in Chapel Hill, was it mainly white males like yourself, or were there women, and were there, you know, black gay male? Or,
there weren't women on the places on campus. There were black men
mm-hmm.
that frequented the places on campus. There were women in the gay bars that I went to. Lots of women there. Mm-hmm. There was a large gay women community in mm-hmm. the Triangle area that you know, frequented the bars. They were in a lot of ways segregated in the bars. I mean, the men sort of kept to themselves, and the women kept to themselves in the mm-hmm. bars. So, but there were a lot of women
okay.
at these bars.
Okay. All right. Well, so then you graduated from UNC in 1977.
December of 77.
December of 77. Mm-hmm. Okay. So once you graduated, what was your plan?
I had no plan.
You had no plan.
I had a plan. No. I really didn't know what I was going to do. I continued to work at the student union, thinking, you know, at least I had some money coming in. I could think about, am I going to go back to graduate school? Am I going to try to interview for jobs? I never really interviewed for jobs here in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you want to skip ahead, but I had a friend that was, I went through the whole summer of 78, and in fall of 78, I had a friend in Atlanta who had been transferred to San Francisco by the government. He asked me if I wanted to move out there with him. I wasn't doing anything here, didn't have any plans here. So I said, well, yeah, I've always wanted to go to California. At least I'll ride out there with you. So I packed a couple of bags, and we got in his little Volkswagen. I went to caught a Greyhound bus down to Atlanta, and we got in his Volkswagen, and we drove to San Francisco, and got out there and enjoyed it. It was a really nice city. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of partying, did a lot of drinking, did a lot of spending money. I realized I didn't have any money left, so I had to get a job, and got a job there, started making some friends, and I was here for a long time.
Mm-hmm. You said you didn't apply to jobs or anything in North Carolina.
No.
Were you kind of ready to get out, or?
I think I sort of was in the back of my mind. I didn't know it myself.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't anything here at the time, except working for the university, maybe. I like Chapel Hill. I still do. I love Chapel Hill. It's always been my home, mm-hmm. no matter how long I've been away. But I just felt like I needed to do something else. And this friend moving to San Francisco was a godsend. It gave me it sort of gave me a focus,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't have here. I would have been perfectly happy to work at the Student Union snack bar for the rest of my life and mm-hmm. live in Chapel Hill. And I've been perfectly happy.
Mm-hmm.
Happy on one level, I guess. I mm-hmm. wouldn't have been completely happy.
Mm-hmm.
But
at that time, your social life, what percentage of it was like through the gay community? I guess when you were still here, what percentage of it was through the gay community, and what was outside?
Probably my last couple of years, it was entirely part mm-hmm. of the gay community.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All of my friends were gay, and everything I did was with my gay friends and stuff like that.
Was that pretty strictly social, or did y'all ever have any like political goals?
None. It was mostly social at the time. Social. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So then you moved out to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
What was life like out there? I mean, how different was it from Chapel Hill?
It was amazingly mm-hmm. different. Yeah. I mean, the gay community in San Francisco in the late 70s, early 80s was just huge. I mean, there were bars all over the place. There were bathhouses all over the place. There were cruisy areas. It was just, you know, for a sexually active gay male, it was just heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
that didn't last long, of course.
Right.
But, so it was a fun time. It was mm-hmm. a very fun time.
How did you end up finding a job, or what did you decide to go into?
Well, I ended up, I was walking down Market Street in San Francisco one day, and there was a temporary employment agency. I just stopped in. The only interview I ever had in San Francisco, I interviewed for a small admin job with Deloitte & Touche. It was Touche Ross and Company at the time. I said, you know, the lady said, we have this job over at Touche Ross. If you'd like to interview for it, do you have any clothes? I said, well, I do, but they're all in storage over in Oakland. I don't have any clothes. So all I had was jeans and a T-shirt. And she called the woman and said, he doesn't have any clothes. Can he come over? And she said, we don't care. Come on over. So I went over and talked to my future boss, and she hired me on the spot. Mm-hmm. And it was just a, you know, I don't remember what it was called. It was just an admin job, you know, in the mailroom, sort of like that. And I was there for 31 years.
So you obviously liked it.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it. I liked the people that worked there. And
were you openly gay when you were working there?
I was. Yeah, okay. I was totally openly gay my entire time once I got to San Francisco. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I guess as time progressed, could you talk more about the gay community in San Francisco? I mean, you said that changed quickly.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, people started getting sick. I mean, that happened before I left Chapel Hill.
Really? That was already...
Well, you know, I look back on that time, and I can't really remember if it was before I left, but there was, you know, people were getting sick here. It seems like they were getting sick while I was still living here, but that may not be the case. Mm-hmm. It may have been, you know, coming back for visits and finding out that people were getting sick here.
How did that impact the community here, at least when you came back? I mean, how was...
I don't remember that I even recognized how the community was affected here. I wasn't here long enough to really know. I know a friend of mine, Hoagie Gaskins, I don't know if that name has come up. I'm sure it has. He was really the first person that I knew, or that anybody around here knew, had come down with AIDS. Mm-hmm. And I think he might have died even before there was a name for it. Mm-hmm. I was away from here, so I don't really remember when he died, but I remember hearing about his illness and, you know.
What was the thinking about AIDS at the time? I mean, when this was just starting to happen?
It was terrifying. Nobody mm-hmm. knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. Didn't know how you got it, or you knew what the symptoms were. And so everybody developed symptoms, you know, just psychologically. Mm-hmm. Everything that came, every time you came down with a cold, every time you coughed, every time you had night sweats, every symptom you could have, you know, was AIDS, and you were terrified about dying. I remember getting plantar's warts on my feet one time, and I lived with that for several months, thinking it was AIDS and not knowing how to tell anybody, what to do. Well, there was nothing you really could do. You could just suffer and die at the time. And they finally got so sore that I took my shoes off one night for my roommate and showed it. I said, I think I've got AIDS. And he said, those are plantar's warts. Go get them taken off. I've had those several times. So, you know, I suffered with that, thinking it was AIDS for a while. And
that must have been pretty intense.
It was. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about how AIDS affected the huge gay community in San Francisco?
The gay community really came together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's bad that AIDS had to happen, but the gay community really came around and came together mm-hmm. and took care of their own when nobody else would in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I can remember volunteering for the Shante Project, which was a thing in San Francisco that tried taking care of AIDS people. Mm-hmm. And we would go shopping for people that had AIDS and just do run errands for them, sit with them and talk with them. And, you know, I did that for several people that eventually ended up dying. It was sort of, I eventually got burned out and had to stop. Mm-hmm. But You know, I think the gay community came together and really took care of the people that had AIDS before anybody else did.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that you yourself became more political or more kind of activist oriented when AIDS came on the scene?
I think I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How many of your friends or your acquaintances specifically were affected while you were in San Francisco?
I had four close friends that died, and I had, you know, many, many, many more acquaintances and people that I knew through other friends, and you know, that were just part of a larger circle of people that I knew. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sexually, did that change the mindset of the gay community in San Francisco, you think?
It did for a large part of the of the community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the bars pretty much, I mean, the bars pretty much closed as a result of people not going to them anymore. I mean, after several years, those places started opening up again. But I think originally, you know, when the AIDS crisis first started, people stopped going to the bars and started taking a little better care of themselves and you know, using condoms and, you know, taking all the precautions that you needed to take.
Mm-hmm. So you were in San Francisco 31 years.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you were, you know, it was the 90s and the 2000s, how involved were you still in the gay community socially in San Francisco?
Not a lot, really. I mean, I sort of moved away from that as a lot of people did. I mean, it was, San Francisco was a very comfortable city to live in. You could be gay without being totally wrapped up in a gay community or having all gay friends. You could have, and this was true, it's becoming more true all over the country, but this was true early in San Francisco, that you could actually be out in your work environment, in your friend environment. You could be out, a gay person, and be comfortable in any environment, because it was just accepted, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, over the, you know, after 5 or 6 years, I developed a circle of friends that included some gay people, but also included quite a few straight people.
Mm-hmm. So, what year did you retire?
I retired in 2009.
2009.
Mm-hmm.
And did you consider staying in San Francisco, or did you want to move back to North Carolina?
No, I decided right away to move back to Chapel Hill. I mean, that had been sort of my plan all along over the years, that when I finally retired, that I would move back to Chapel Hill, because this is my home.
Mm-hmm. How was that experience of moving back? I mean, do you still have some old friends here?
I only have a couple of friends still here, and I see Dan still occasionally. We have lunch probably once every couple of weeks, and I have another friend that we get together occasionally, but not very often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been sort of a difficult. No, it has been difficult. I like it here, and it was a good move, but it's sort of hard to make friends as an older person who's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that a lot of my circle of friends I made out of the workplace, and I'm here not working, and it's sort of hard to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that sense, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. What's it like in terms of, is there somewhat of a kind of an older gay community that, I mean, you said you're still friends with Dan Leonard and that kind of thing. But I mean, is there some cohesion there, you think?
I don't know of any gay, older gay community here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan and I really haven't talked about it. I don't know if he's part of something or not, but I haven't found it, and I don't know if it exists or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess, how do you kind of view... It can be in terms of Chapel Hill, the South, you know, nationally. But how do you view the biggest kind of challenges facing gay men and women today? It's a tough question, I know.
That is a tough question. And I sort of... Well, the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that gay, problem that gay people have is just being able to live their lives, you know, without harassment and without, you know, being judged for being gay. And that's getting better and better, but it's still got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, I don't know. I hope this doesn't sound bad. I don't think of myself as being a gay man anymore. I mean, I definitely am, but it's sort of it's not a major part of my life mm-hmm. at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had sex with anyone in several years by choice, and you know that's not exactly what I mean when I say that, and I'm not sure exactly how to express what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. It's just being gay was a big part of my life back in when I was younger, and sort of it evolved in San Francisco as being something that it didn't really matter because I was just who I was. Mm-hmm. I was a gay man living in just the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have to be an activist at all time. I didn't have to be gay all the time. I could just be who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of moved even further here in Chapel Hill since I don't really have any involvement in any sort of gay community here. Mm-hmm. I don't think of myself as being, it's not something that is important to me at the moment.
Right. So earlier you mentioned that you haven't come out formally to your family yet.
No.
Is that just your parent? Like, does your brother know? Or are you still close with your brother at all?
I'm close to my brother, yeah. I mean, people have told me, you know, how can you be close to him if that's a part of your life he doesn't know anything about?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know anything about his sex life either. So,
right.
You know, and it's a big part of my life, but there are other parts of my life that he can be a part of and mm-hmm. that my mother can be a part of. I'm sure that they have some sense of it.
Mm-hmm. Has it ever come up like in conversation with him?
No.
What about with your dad at all? No.
Actually, there was one conversation with my dad that I had during the Anita Bryant thing. I think that was in late 60s sometime.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't. It was later than that. It was later in the 70s. But my dad was sick at this time. He had this brain tumor, and he lived for 12 years after that. But he had sort of a bad life for those 12 years. He had gone blind, and there were periods of almost childlike. He would be almost childlike that, you know, the tumor would do something to his mind. And there would be periods of several weeks when he would be normal and talking, you know, as he did back when he was okay. But mostly it was bad. But there was a period during the Anita Bryant thing. He hit my mom and him and me were sitting in our den in Rockingham. And we were just chatting he brought up Anita Bryant, and I could sort of see my mom squirm, you know. I'm sure at this time she knew I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
She knew that I didn't want to talk about it, and that was okay with her. You know, whatever I wanted was okay. But I think my dad wanted to talk about it. He knew too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "What do you think of Anita Bryant?" And I said, "Well..." I don't remember what I think I fumbled over some words and I said, "What do you think of her?" And he said something like, I don't remember his exact words, but I have enough trouble worrying about my own salvation without worrying about somebody else's. And so I took that as he was telling me it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Have you gotten any other sense of how your parents, I guess your dad, how he felt about, besides that, about just, you know, gay people in general, or about your mom maybe now?
The only other thing, my dad, yeah, it's sort of part of this conversation. It may not have been that same day, but it was sort of a continuing conversation that he tried to have with me, mm-hmm. that I wasn't willing to have. Mm-hmm. He had mentioned that the two ladies that lived right directly across the street from us for my entire childhood were lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I never even thought about it until he said that. He said, everybody knew that. It was okay.
Wow.
I don't know where, you know, I'm sure he knew he was about to die. Mm-hmm. And I think he just wanted to talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. And I should have talked to him about it. And I just did not feel comfortable doing it at the time. And that's something that I regret.
Right. Now. So I was just going to ask, was it just a comfort thing as far as why you weren't willing to have that conversation with any of your family? I mean, it's obviously a very personal thing. But
I was very close to my family. I liked having my family close to me. And I had seen what that conversation had done mm-hmm. to other people and their families. And I thought they would be okay with it, but I wasn't completely sure, and I wasn't willing to take that chance at mm-hmm. the time.
Okay, I completely understand. Well, I think that's all the questions I have.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or is there anything you thought I'd ask that I didn't?
No.
Okay.
I can't think of anything.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it. I thank you very much. That was a lot easier than I thought. And I...